The recordings have been started.
Thank you.
Lovely, thank you. Greg, would you like me to do a quick roll call?
Please do, thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. On today's call, we have Greg Aaron, George Kirikos, Mike O'Connor, Roland Perry, Faisal Shah, James Bledel, Rod Rasmussen, Martin Sutton, and we also have Caleb Quirin. Please do correct me on the spelling of the name. Pronunciation. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and apologies from Jeff Newman. Thank you. And Barry Codd has just joined as well.
Thank you. I see some people are on the line. Most are in Adobe. We will be using Adobe today to look at some documents and so forth. So if you do have the opportunity, please do log into Adobe Connect. Before I go through today's agenda, just some housekeeping items. The first is a reminder that in addition to the recordings, these calls are also put on transcripts. And occasionally the person who's doing the transcription has a little trouble figuring out who is speaking. Don't always know the voices by what they sound like. So as a friendly reminder, please do identify yourself if you haven't already been identified by name when you're speaking. Also, we have three mics in our group, so we're going to use Mike to mean Mike Rodenbaugh, Mikey to mean Mike O'Connor, and then we have Michael Young, and he'll be Michael. So that's how we'll do things, make sure the transcripts are attributed. Also, I'd like to introduce a new member of our working group, that is Caleb, who has joined just recently, and he's put up his statement of interest. But Caleb, if you could just please tell the group briefly a little bit about who you are and your interest in the group.
Hello, everybody. My name is Caleb Quirin. I'm the chief scientist at Cyvalence in our cyber intelligence division. And Greg Ogorek, who I believe most folks on the call probably know, introduced me to the idea of joining, and it sounds interesting, and I'm excited to assist in whatever way I can.
Thank you very much, Caleb, and we're glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Okay, well, today we'll do our usual review of the subgroups that we have underway, and then we will move on, as time allows, to new topics on our list of potential abuses. So first item is an update from the cyber squatting group. And let's see, who is on board today from that group? James? And
it's probably just me, I think. Or Mikey.
Actually, I don't know. Is Mikey
this
on
is
that?
Mikey. I'm not on that one. Sorry, James.
Okay. You know. Sorry.
I think it's just you, James.
this is James, and once again, I'm standing in on this group, although I wouldn't consider myself a necessarily active member. There was a message that Mike posted to the list relative to some of the definitions of cyber squatting. We have not actually met as a sub-team, and there has not been a lot of activity other than a teleconference. At this point, I would like to float the suggestion that we, or at least take the position that we borrow the definition of cyber squatting as it currently exists in the UDRP. I think that that idea was floated on the list as well. There are some interesting other definitions floating around out there, but I think that just from a personal perspective, there's some. Each one it may introduce just as many complications as it resolves. So I think, you know, for the sake of conformity of context within ICANN, I think the UDRP definition is probably works for our purposes.
Okay.
Certainly open to thoughts or corrections on that.
Okay. Since the other members of that group are not on the call today, would you like to post that idea up to the list where they can see it?
I think it has been posted, Greg, but I will certainly, post it in its own thread, and I will do that, yes.
Okay. Now, another thing that we've done to try to assist you guys in this group is Marika has gone through the transcripts and did extract some information at the request of Mike Rodenball. And so she has posted that up to the list as well. I think the idea there is that's some raw material that came out of the discussions, but then the subgroup has to decide how to use that material and what to put forward or what to cut out of it, et cetera.
I've posted that information as well on the wiki for your information.
Thanks again for doing that, Marika. That was very
good. No problem.
So we've got some raw material up there, and I think what we're looking at now from this group is to shape that material and continue to produce something, get to something that the wider group can take a look at. I see George's hand.
George Grigo speaking. I just want to say I support that we just stick to the UDRP definition and not try to embellish it with other material. Just looking at the wiki that Marika created, it still has a problem that arose last time or maybe two meetings ago where it says geo-registration or acquisition of multiple domain names which are identical or confusingly similar to marks of others that are distinctive at the time of registration of such domain names. That captures basically anybody who owns two dictionary word domains. One has taken the position of what constitutes abuse, but one hasn't included all the exceptions to that. What excuses you from being captured by that definition? So that's why we have problems with adding to it without taking into account all the other exclusionary aspects. That was point number VI in the wiki.
Okay.
And a lot of people do own more than one dictionary word domain, at least two people on this call alone. and they're not cyber squatters. Okay. Far from it.
I see Mikey O'Connor's hand.
Yeah, George just beat me to the punch. I'll take my hand down. Sorry. Same comment.
Okay. And James?
Yeah, I think George is correct, and there's also another point that was. Are we looking at the ASPCA definition here? What's on the screen currently?
Well, that had been discussed by the group a bit.
The ACPA, yeah.
We need a recommendation about whether we should do that or not. It is, as you said, it's others. It's from another set of laws. It's from something different than UDRP.
Right. And the two. This is James again. And the two points that I think I posted, I did not receive response. Was that similar to what George was saying? That there's a notion of recidivism or pattern behavior in the ATPA, and there's also it broadens the standard from identical string, which is what's compared under UDRP, into confusingly similar, which I think has its own host of issues and complexities. So I think that that's just adding support to what George is saying about just going with what we have in the UDRP for now.
Okay. Any other thoughts on cyber squatting for now? I don't see any hands raised. I'd like to move on because I think where we are right now with cyber squatting is the group needs to make some progress using its wiki and the recent material that Marika has provided. So I will, unless there are any other comments, let's leave the cyber squatting group to its work. And we look forward to seeing something from them.
Greg, can I just make one comment? It's Marika.
Please do.
No, I just wanted to offer to the group, if there's any need to set up a conference call so the group can actually discuss by telephone, you know, we're happy to facilitate that, and they can just drop me or Glenn an email so we can set it up.
Absolutely. And of course, that's something we're also doing for the contracts group. And if a group ever does need to block out some additional time for itself to get together, the staff is always happy to help facilitate that. Okay. Let's move on then to the next thing, which is uniformity in contracts. And there's been a lot of work that's been done on this topic over the last couple of weeks. So I would like to turn the floor over to Barry, who's been doing some intense work on this.
Thank you, Greg. Yes, this is Barry Cobb. Short and brief. We met again last Thursday and had a pretty good session. Again, our charter, more or less, is to determine if uniformity of contracts relative to abuse is necessary or not in our world or across the marketplace. Before we can start to lay down recommendations or thoughts in that regard, we needed to get a better idea of what currently existed out there today. And so the team is working to develop a picture, so to speak, for us to gauge the dispersion and or variance across publicly available registrant contracts at the moment. So the research matrix that we're building right now, we started off with the top five registrars, and we're reviewing through those contracts and tagging components that touch on the topic of abuse, and our representative sample will come. We made the decision that we shouldn't just review the top tier registrars, but we should also review middle tier and lower tier registrars and look at all of their information. So we're hoping that by next call, which will be sometime next week, either next Wednesday or next Thursday, that will have a representative sample across the registrar spectrum of what this dispersion and variance looks like. And depending on the outcome of that, there's basically kind of three paths that we anticipate that we might have to take. Excuse me. The first path is that, you know, based on our research, we see that there is quite a bit of uniformity and that we may not need to do anything at all. Second path is that there is some variance in dispersion and some sort of recommendations might come out of that. Or the third path is that there's, you know, great dispersion and variance and a different set of recommendations may come out of that. We don't have a view as to which one of those paths will traverse. But again, when we meet late next week, we should be able to have a very good picture of what that dispersion looks like, and then we'll come up with our action plan from there. Anybody else that's on the sub-team is welcome to comment in if I've left anything out. Thank you.
James, I see your hand up, but I'll get to you in just a second. I have a couple of questions for Barry just to kind of set the stage. So right now you're looking at the registrar contracts and notice and basically ticking off in a variety of categories what this registrar does or does not have as far as its registrants. Now, one question is, do all the registrars have everything in their RRAs that they're supposed to have according to ICANN? So is that something you're looking at?
Not specifically, I guess the other comment that I'd like to make is I'm hoping that after our team vets the second slice of research that we'll make that available for the wiki for the rest of the working group to see where we're going with this. We didn't want to share it right now just because it's very far from finished and it would raise more questions or concerns than answer anything. So I don't want anybody to, you know, I don't want you to think that we're just trying to hoard or work. I just want to make sure we have a very good finished product before we promote it. Excuse me.
Okay. Understood. It's still in a draft form.
Yeah, so with that said, we are focusing on just the abuse aspects of it, but going through the work, I'm realizing that there is some very common sections that are across at least the top registrar documents, and we're going ahead and tagging those that are kind of outside of abuse, just to help establish some sort of baseline and to help build that uniformity picture, so to speak. There's also the reason why I'm kind of going down this road is there's also some areas that touch on the post-expiration domain name renewal working group as well, and so so there's kind of like a little bit of additional work going on to help build this picture. But to answer your question, Greg, I wouldn't say that we're specifically checking off whether these contracts follow the RAA to the nth degree. We're only really just trying to focus on anything that deals with abuse. And additionally, the scope is literally any kind of language or agreements or contracts that's publicly available on a registrar site. So if a registrant contract doesn't touch or doesn't talk about a specific kind of abuse, we're also looking at like terms of use or universal agreements or other kinds of items outside of just the registrant contract. So we're trying to be as comprehensive as possible. And just for the good of the group, we're tagging this in two ways. First and foremost is we're looking for anything that has a formalized section within the contract, such as like a UDRP section or suspension of service section, et cetera. But we're also doing a review in the contract for specific abuse types. So, you know, we have our working list of definitions that we're building right now. We're also kind of just trying to peer into some of these contracts and, you know, do they say anything specifically about malware or botnets? Do they say anything about falsehoods or anything along those lines? And we have the understanding that these abuse types and definitions are work in progress, but we just wanted to see what some of these, you know, what some of the registrars were doing out there and if they were, you know, specifically identifying and building language around any particular type of abuse.
Okay.
Kind of where we're at.
Okay. I'm going to recognize James, and then after that, Mikey. So, James, please.
Thanks, Greg. This is James, and I just wanted to just support a lot of what Barry was reporting. A couple of quick points. There is an event later this week up in Toronto, so I apologize that I will not be able to attend the call if by the next week statement you meant this week, Barry. I'll have to issue my apologies for that. And secondly, we did introduce a concept, and maybe it's warranted in bringing it in front of the larger group where we discussed the idea, is uniformity always desirable, or is non-uniformity always bad? And we certainly didn't make any judgments on that particular case, but we wanted to possibly discuss that in a wider audience when one considers the variety of jurisdictions and business models of registrars and the markets that they are targeting. So we wanted to put that out as well.
Okay. Mikey?
This is frustrating having my hand up later because you guys all say the stuff I want to say. I think the only thing I want to add, 2 points. First point is I think this is going to be my ritual attaboy for Barry every time we are on this main group call, because Barry is doing fantastic work. The second is I just want to amplify a little bit something that Barry already said, which is that we are really doing sort of exploratory work right now to see, you know, we've kind of coined this term dispersion. We want to see how much variation there is both between registrars, but also now between sort of tiers of registrars and the location of them, before we decide which course to follow. And Barry has been fantastically responsive in changing the way that he's doing his research. Partly we're doing this so that we don't bury him with the analysis of 90-plus sets of contracts, but we started him off down the road looking at 10. At the last call, we backed that off to 5, but then said do 5 in the middle-sized tier and 5 in the smallest tier of registrars. And, oh, by the way, make sure that you've got a little bit more dispersion in terms of where the registrars are located. And Perry has been smoothly fielding all of those late-breaking contradictory requests with very good humor and doing a fantastic job. So when we get through this next call is when we're expecting to be able to sort of plot our course forward and figure out, A, whether we have a problem at all, and then B, if there is a dispersion, what the implications of that are.
Okay. Margie, do you have your hand up?
Yes, I do. I wanted to clarify the RAA language that we were talking about a few minutes ago, if it helps at all when they're doing their research. The RAA, there's a section 3.7.7.11, and it's something that it goes into the registrant agreement, and it basically states that the registered name holder shall agree that its registration of the registered name shall be subject to suspension, cancellation, or transfer pursuant to any ICANN-adopted specification or policy or pursuant to any registrar or registry procedure not inconsistent with an ICANN-adopted specification or policy to correct mistakes by the registrar or registry operator in registering the name or to for the resolution of disputes concerning the registered name. So that's the language that's currently specified in the RAA.
Okay. Barry?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to piggyback on what Mikey was saying, and he is correct in terms of how we've kind of expanded our data points, if you will. Just to clarify, we talked about top, middle, and bottom. What we're using as our reference as to who's in the top, middle, and bottom is the number of domains registered by registrar according to webhosting.info. And so in traversing that list, it's very easy to take the top 5 and 10 as, they're the ones that predominantly own most of the market space. And in terms of trying to get to the middle and bottom tiers, this is kind of a new update that I haven't shared with our team, but it's not as cut and dry as that. When we start getting into the middle and bottom tiers, we start running into some that I'm picking are turned out to be resellers from another registrar, so we're kind of throwing those out as independents, if you will. And certainly when we get into the bottom tier, it's definitely not the bottom. When we get into the last 200, most of those registrars have less than 2,000 registered names. So I've kind of bumped it up a little bit, and anything that is any registrar that is a little bit greater than 0.5% of the market space and or more than 20 or 30,000 registered names, that's kind of the space that I'm picking from, so to speak. So we'll still have a very good representative sample across the entire spectrum, but it's not as hard, concrete, middle, or bottom tier. And then the last point is, most definitely, we are expanding the spectrum and making sure that I try to get a representative sample from the various countries across the world as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Barry? and his team. I don't see any. So Barry, you mentioned that you'll be having another meeting, and then do you think after that, the spreadsheet might be in shape where you're far enough along to share it?
Personally, I would say yes, but I would like agreement from the rest of the team. We are kind of advancing down the road of comparing from one registrar to the next, and I want to make sure, there's definitely sensitivity around that. So before we share it in anything beyond our sub-team, I'd like us to make a decision as to whether we should maybe remove registrar names and those kinds of things before we share it openly. But I think that we'll be able to bring conclusion to those kinds of decisions at our next meeting. And then whatever we decide, my hope is that we are in a position to share what we've got so far.
Okay, great. Well, we look forward to hearing more. And then I had a couple of last questions. One of them is, it sounds like you're tracing language as far as it needs to go, because some of the registrant agreements that the registrars have also reference other terms and conditions sometimes. So they might not be in the registrant agreement, but it might still be binding on the registrant. So it sounds like you're tracing those. Is that correct?
Trying to where possible. I can't say that I'm going to hit it 100% for every registrar, but that is my intent. And I'd also like to throw out there just real quick, and Marika reminded me of this, is our spectrum isn't going to just close with registrant or with the registrars. We're still going to, eventually our goal is to try to scrub other documentation out there as it deals with the registries and those kinds of things as well. We're just starting at the most publicly available and accessible information at this point in time.
Okay, sounds great. Okay. Well, last call on this topic for today. Any other thoughts? And hearing none, let's move on to malware and botnet control. And that is Rod and myself. Rod, I don't know if you noticed, but late last week I did some editing on the wiki.
Great.
So we've made some progress. One of the things we're writing about right now is we're doing the background section and kind of the problem statement, which is pieces of malware like Conficker and Torpig that are controlled through domain names. And one of the problems is that sometimes they use lists, this malware uses lists of domains which may or may not be registered. So you have the problem of some names might already be registered by someone. It might be the bad guy, or it might be by coincidence an innocent party. And then you may have tremendous numbers of domains that could be used to control the malware, but aren't registered yet. So what do you do about that? Rod had pointed out some good background research that's been done on the topic, and so I've been putting that material into shape and extracting some key quotes from it. For example, there was an estimate of the amount of money one would have to spend in order to register all the Conficker names that could be used to control the Conficker botnet, and it was upwards of $71 million U.S. So we're making a little progress there. I'm contributing because I actually had to deal with Conficker this summer because it was going to use names in some of the registries I work with. So, Rod, any other thoughts on this one?
I haven't really been able to add more than what I did a little while back. My only other thought is that I did hear we have some new blood or fresh meat who might be able to add some expertise right to this very issue.
Caleb, I think he's talking about you.
I would be talking about Caleb, yes.
Hi, guys. I have to admit, I'm going to be a little bit less than available than I'd like to be for the next few weeks, but I'm happy to jump in right after that. I'm going to be getting married this weekend, so when I return, I'm all yours.
Well, that is the best excuse I have ever heard from a working group member anywhere.
Beat that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Weeks.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
What are you doing on this call, man? You should
exactly.
absolutely. Let's. Why don't we hook up in September?
That would be great.
Our very best to you.
Thank you very much.
As you take this next step. So that's great. Thank you. Okay, well, tell you what, in early September, Rod and I will contact you and we'll tell you what we're up to. And why don't we talk about the additional background that you might have.
I look forward to it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Caleb. All right. Front running is our next topic, and George had volunteered to take the lead on that, and George has been producing some material. So the floor is yours, George.
Hi, George speaking. I guess it's about 8 days ago I went through and summarized all the discussions we had in the prior conference call and also discussions on the mailing list, and it's all on the wiki for people to review, and I hope everybody had a chance to review on it, to review it. There hasn't been much discussion on the mailing list since that time, so I don't know whether there's anything more that needs to be discussed or whether people are prepared to start filling out those sections on the spreadsheet as to legitimate use, requires DNS, and potential recommendations. I already kind of went forward with some possible recommendations, basically reiterating the SAC reports, but perhaps people violently disagree with me, or who knows. So I kind of leave the floor open and welcome your input further.
Okay. And of course, one of the interesting things that's happened recently is ICANN did release some numbers about the results of the new ad grace period excess deletion fee, which was instituted in April in most registries. So we now have some numbers from April and May and June. It appears that policy is having a significant effect. And I forget if we circulated the link to that study or not. If not, I can do it.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, okay. It basically says that that's cutting down significantly on tasting. So, side note there. George, did you want to...
I think Marika had her hand up first.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to point out in relation to the Edelman study on front running, I have already forwarded the questions that were posted on the list and some of the discussion points, and we expect a response from Benjamin Edelman shortly on that. If there are any further questions on the specific study itself, please do forward them to me so I can coordinate that internally and we can get some feedback for you on that.
Marika, what are the questions that have been asked thus far?
Sorry, from this group or?
Or, well, I guess from this group and in general, what are the questions that you are pursuing answers for?
They are also listed on the wiki page that George created. There were some questions regarding the methodology raised by Jeff. I think George made some comments, as well as James and Roland. Some were more general comments. So the links are there to those different email threads. So I forwarded that, and I said if there are any. I haven't seen any other questions from other directions. There might be more, but I'm not aware of those.
Okay. George and then Mikey, please.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on that interaction between domain tasting and front running. there is some overlap, as you suggested. For example, the way Network Solutions was doing the indiscriminate front running of all names that were all unregistered names that were looked up at Network Solutions. But the topic is bigger than just that. You know, if people had actually looked up high quality names that the front runners took and held on to, you know, more than just the ad grace period, i.e. they kept it forever or at least 1 year, then it wouldn't be caught up by those statistics that ICANN produced on domain tasting. So that study, you know, just covers one aspect of the interaction between front running and domain tasting.
Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I confess that this is the very first time I've looked at the wiki page, and it's looking great. I'm curious, George, at the bottom, possible recommendations, are those ones that you came up with, or are those ones that we talked about on the list? Tell me a little more about those. I like them. I'm just curious.
Those are ones I came up with on my own. That's why I put for discussion. And there hasn't been very much discussion, so I'd be happy for everybody to discuss. I know some will probably disagree with them, like Jeff Yeman as a registry might not be in favor of some of them. But I thought I'd toss them out there just to discuss.
You know, I would encourage other folks on the call, if you're like me and haven't looked at the page, to take a look at those. I think they're substantive and useful for discussion. And so I think, Greg, you may have to crack the whip over us to dive a little deeper on that one.
Okay. Consider it cracked. And George is doing exactly what he should be doing, which is, you know, putting stuff into that template, you know, to get material out in front of everybody for consideration. So, you know, drafting recommendations and so forth, that's absolutely what every group should be doing. We will eventually, you know, we can discuss those offline on the list, of course, and then eventually we will go through each section for each topic and talk about them more formally. But I'm always very happy to see anybody putting stuff down on paper where everybody can see it and think about it.
This is Mikey again. I just want to support that. I've worked on, outside of ICANN, a lot of policy stuff, and it's always really helpful to have a draft to work from rather than having to come up with it from a clean sheet. So I didn't want to imply at all that I disapprove of what George is doing. Quite the opposite.
Oh, no. I didn't take it that way. It's I want to continue to encourage everybody to do what people like Barry and George are doing. That's our goal, get that stuff out there, get something down for everybody to think about. So, George?
Oh, James had his hand up first.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
Thanks, and this is James. And that is great work, George. I just wanted to point out that's a really great synopsis of a lot of different materials. And I wanted to point out that if it is not currently in your list, we could add it, or if it is there and I haven't found it yet, perhaps we can highlight this idea. But, you know, as a registrar, when you're offering domain registrations online, a lot of things can happen during a transaction. So, you know, very legitimately, someone could look up and purchase a name, but then the credit card has expired, for example, or their browser crashes in the middle of the transaction. And we wanted, of course, to provide a way for the customer to recover that transaction and finish it properly. And I think that that's sort of the genesis behind some of these ideas of what's called a cart hold. I don't know that they, since the change in the tasting policy and AGP restrictions, I don't think that we're seeing this product or service quite so much, and I'm the only registrar on the call, and we don't do it, so I'm just kind of throwing this out there to the general community this idea that is there any legitimacy to someone coming in, registering a name, and the registrar
putting it on hold for that person, as long as that specific person who actually did the initial lookup and registration is able to recover that name, and that is separate from what we would traditionally think of as front running.
This is Mikey. I'd really like to see an exploration of that topic, because I've always wondered what happens in the middle of a process that could take 5, 10, 15 minutes, how the ties, if you will, get broken in that. And I think it might be something very useful to explore, make a recommendation about, and set some rules of the road for the registrars and registries on this. So I'd second that emotion.
And this is James again. I'd like to point out that the cost justification or the economic case for offering such a service has probably evaporated with the restrictions in AGP. So this may be irrelevant in the current context, but it certainly wasn't a couple of years ago or this time last year, and I just wanted to put that on the table for consideration as we try to put some boundaries around front running and especially some of the legitimate uses of what could be tarred with a front running brush, and also possibly some of the failure cases of registration processes that might look like front running, but they're in fact breakdowns of that system.
This is Mikey again. I think the substitute I'd offer is registration of topical domain names. The YFTSNF 54 group appears on the scene, and or the scientific concept of Argelbarg, and two people or more simultaneously try to register the name. What happens if person A started the process at 10 o'clock sharp, person B came in at 10:05, person A's browser crashes and they don't get back to the session until 10:10. Who wins that tie, and how is that decision made, I think, is a really interesting topic.
So racetrack conditions.
Yeah.
This is Greg. So, James, are you kind of talking about where a registrant is actually trying to register a domain name, and then the browser crashes or whatever while they're in the sign-up process? It's not that they just have looked it up. It's that they're actually trying to buy that one?
Yes, that it's if I can introduce some very non-uniform language. It's basically registered and it's put into their cart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, the avail check has been sent to the registry. The create command may or may not have been sent to the registry, depending upon at which stage in the transaction the registrar executes that. Now, to add to complexity to what Mikey's example there, suppose registrar A for the early bird that wants to get the domain is very conservative and doesn't issue the avail check or the create command until after they've been paid. Suppose registrar B is a little more aggressive and enters it while the customer is entering their credit card, figuring that they can play the odds that 99% of those transactions are going to go through. So the racetrack conditions definitely enter into this, as well as the failure conditions during the registration process.
Mm-hmm.
George here. Just to go over, I think this might have been discussed slightly in the SEC reports, and that's why one of the recommendations was this being a better education. What this comes down to really is how registrars design their processes. You could have one registrar where the orders don't take, where the user, registers online, registers their credit card, and then does availability checks, kind of like Amazon's one click. And if you did it that way, then there really is no issue about delay, because you don't even, a proper design wouldn't even do an availability check through the registry. They would do the availability check locally if they had a copy of the zone file, or if they had a copy of all registered domain names. I don't know if people caught on to that discussion, but if registrars are better educated, they would design their registration process with these kinds of issues taken into account, and they can do that, you know, competitively. One registrar who is, you know, very security conscious, wants to make sure that nobody else can get access to their information, will never query the registry. They would just issue a create command, and they'll issue that create command, you know, after the user has logged in and so on. But the other issue is that if we do suggest something like a card hold, that just, you know, recreates the loophole that people can take advantage of. And so I'm not sure that people want to go down that road. I can mention it more explicitly in the wiki, but that's how I personally feel, that if you implement the card hold, it's just creating another ad grace period that people will abuse and use that as an option instead of an actual, you know, committed purchase. And if that committed purchase took place, like on a one-click, that's something that the registrars can implement competitively. Like, it doesn't need any ICANN policy.
Oh, this is Mikey. I'm entranced with process stuff, as people who've worked with me before know. And I think that one of the things that's useful about just mapping out the process with the various transactions going to various places, the authentication, the auth check versus the I'm not even using the terms because these are all new, the hold term. It seems to me useful to get those sort of out into public view and have a conversation about things like how long a period of time, for example, should a card hold be permitted, if permitted at all. 10 minutes, an hour, a day, and as the time goes up, I agree with you, George, that's where the front-running kind of issue, the issue with tasting starts to reappear. So I'm not sure I know where I stand on it. I'm mostly just lobbying hard for exploring and documenting it at this point.
George, there actually would be a way to do it if one wanted to do it properly, and that would be to, as you said, do it for short periods, and secondly, make it so that the domain name doesn't resolve, because the ad grace period as currently stands, you can add the name servers, test the traffic, make sure it's a good name in that sense. If you remove the ability to have the name resolve, then the registrar, or sorry, the front-running registrant, whatever, whether that is the registrar or some other person, can't check to see whether the name is getting traffic and figure out whether it's, you know, an economically viable domain name on its own. But that would be one, you know, compromise.
Yeah, this is Mikey. You know, it's that kind of stuff that I think if we sort of dissected this process a little bit more, documented it. You know, we often did that in some of the inter-registrar transfer stuff. If we can sort of take that process apart and put it on the table, then that's where some of these ideas can quickly be suggested and wind up.
Hey, Mikey, this is James. I'm sorry, I tried to put my hand up a couple of times and it keeps clearing.
I'll be quiet now.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to jump in and say you're tracing very closely, if not wading right into what registrars consider the recipe for their own, you know, secret sauce in some of these processes, you know, and it really boils down to, you know, some things about risk tolerance or experience with different customers. As George was saying, we have certain customers that, you know, we allow them to keep methods of payment on file. Some registrars would feel that it would be perhaps too risky to accept credit card or online payments at all. So, you know, I think that documenting the process would be interesting and would definitely help bring some of the, you know, the alleged ideas about front-running out into the open, and I think would probably vindicate a lot of the folks that are continuously tarnished with that idea. But ultimately, I don't think that we're ever going to get that kind of a peek behind the covers. And again, I'm not trying to be an obstructionist here. I'm just trying to say that, you know, we're starting to traipse into an area where
Registrars have worked very hard and become very innovative in developing these processes, and there may not be a one-size-fits-all for all different types of customers. And you know, leveraging that knowledge for a competitive gain versus their versus other registrars is very important to all of them.
Okay.
George, here, that's right. That's why I said it's kind of like an education issue that the registrars might not necessarily want to participate in because it might give an advantage to their competitors. But it was kind of already caught up in the FAC reports. If you look at the prior research section, it says, checking the availability of a domain name can be a sensitive act which may disclose an interest in or value ascribed to a domain name. And it talks about third parties. Because, you know, the way, for example, I register a domain name, I, you know, am very sensitive about how I do a lookup because I'm, you know, paranoid by nature, I guess, about good domain names and their availability. But, you know, if you go to certain registrars, they'll, you know, run that name through multiple name spinners. They'll give you names that are available for sale in other marketplaces. So there's all kinds of leaks to third parties that can take place. And ultimately, the registrars are able to compete on the basis of how much they disclose to third parties and so on. So right now, we do have a level playing field, but the actual place that I was most concerned about is at the registry level, because while the registrars are able to compete equally, the registries do have ultimately the most sensitive data. And if there was a policy that needed to be created, it might need to be directed mostly to them. But
so this is Mikey again, and I'm sorry, I don't have my hand up, so Chairman Greg, shut me up any time I'm
going
too far.
Hey, Mikey. go ahead.
Is that a yes? I should shut up now.
Go ahead.
Let me do one more round. It seems to me that the way through this is maybe to stand firmly on George's education island and educate, draft a process not by asking registrars or registries to reveal their particular practices, because I get that secret sauce stuff from James's point. But rather to go back to James's earlier part of this conversation where he was sort of laying out the different possible ways of doing it without saying who does what, and then contemplate the either education opportunities or policy opportunities that generic discussion produces. I think that the good fight here is to find a way to have that conversation without impinging on the proprietary processes of registrars, because this little piece of this call has been very enlightening to me, and I'm sure that there are lots of less sophisticated registrants who would also benefit from understanding those issues. So now I'll let this dog lie.
Okay. This is Greg. I had my hand up. And I guess, as usual with any topic that we're exploring, we need to establish what the harm is or the damage. In other words, is it an abuse or not? So as we get into the niceties of what registrars are doing in their implementations, think about that. And George, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I cleared it, but it was still up. Yeah, basically, I guess the harm really is to people that are not educated, like people that are first-time registrants, like the grandmother in Wisconsin that wants to, you know, get a domain name for her blog, and she has a bad experience registering a domain name because, you know, somebody else takes it. The harm, I guess, isn't to the registry because, you know, the domain name still gets registered, VeriSign still makes their $7 or whatever. The registrar still makes their profit. I guess it's the turnoff effect because they don't know any better, the uneducated or the newbie consumer. So that's why a lot of the recommendations that I put in the draft were education and how to do that and disclosure by registrars. And then number four, I guess, was disclosure as well. Number three is more study. Number five really is going to the sophisticated people. If you have that that list of all registered domain names, then you don't actually have to do that availability check. So that, you know, helps registrars themselves raise the bar on how they do availability checks, reduces that information leakage that can occur. And so I guess, you know, the sophisticated users are never going to be harmed because they know all the rules inside out. It's, I guess, the unsophisticated ones that are potentially turned off by the process. It might not be, you know, real harm because they never had a right to a certain domain name to begin with.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments on where we are at the moment on this topic?
This is James, and very briefly, just wanted to say, George, there are numerous problems checking the zone file, as you mentioned, versus sending the availability check, and we can discuss that offline, but just wanted to maybe point that out, and we can move on.
Well, it sounds like an action item for everybody is to take a look at the work that George has placed on the wiki. Ask him any questions or make any recommendations or changes that you would like. and as Marika mentioned, if you have any questions about the Edelman study, you can send those to her, and she has put the questions so far up online. Okay. We are at the top of the hour, so we have about 30 minutes. Does anybody need a quick break before the home stretch?
I'm okay. Nope. This is Mikey. Let's keep going.
Good here.
Okay.
We might even be finished early.
Well, there's always more. If everybody's fine, let's go to a new topic then from our list. And Marika has that doc. She'll put it online. After front running, we had a topic which is inappropriate use of whois, but maybe we fold that into the bigger whois question. We will be referring whois up to the council in some way. I'm working on that right now, just to try to get some clarity on scope. So after that was use of stolen/fraudulent credentials. If memory serves, that was a topic that Rod Rasmussen was interested in. Rod, though, has dropped off because it's early on the West Coast and he's taking care of his kids at the moment. Does anybody mind if we circle back to that one later when he can join us? Okay. If not, we've got a set of, for want of a better term, perhaps crime related. And we may need to do a little consolidation around these. What we see on the list is, let me pull things up here. We've got phishing, and then phishing emails, malware emails, farming, email scams, and spam. I'm wondering if that really boils down to just three things, which would be phishing, spam, and malware. They're all in some ways related to each other because the way you get people to go to a phishing site is by sending them an email. Some, but not all malware is spread via lures in emails. So I'm wondering if we should just say phishing, spam, malware are three categories with some obvious interactions between them. But they also seem discrete to me. So any thoughts on that?
Uh,
This is Barry. I would take a position on consolidating these. Let's try to make it, you know, make it a little bit simpler.
Okay. I'll take it upon myself to provide some notes up to the list on that. After we've heard all the comments, Mikey, I see your hand.
Yeah, sorry, I was away from my computer. I guess the question that I don't remember how we resolved this. Did we come to a conclusion on the distinction? This is a scope question. That's in many cases that's not registration abuse. That's domain name abuse, and I can't remember where we landed in terms of whether those are even in scope.
Well, I think that is the next big question. We need to do some consolidation because if we decide it's out of scope, we still want to mention it in the report that we talked about the things. But I think if you've opened up the next big question. Are these basically registration issues or are these use issues? Now, first we should make sure that everybody understands kind of the mechanics of how these problematic activities take place. And I've done a lot of professional work on these. Phishing is defined as basically putting up a false website that purports to be a financial institution or other kind of site. And the criminal puts up that falsified page in an attempt to get people to input their credit card numbers or other sensitive information. Some phishing is done on website pages where the domain has been registered by the phisher. They need to put up a site so they go register a domain. About 20% of phishing cases are on domains registered by phishers. And that statistic comes from the semi-annual phishing surveys that Rod Rasmussen and I do. We actually study all the phishing that takes place over a six-month period, and we go through all the domains and so forth, and we break them out. About 80% of the phishing sites are on compromised websites. These are websites owned by innocent registrants, but the criminals are able to basically hack into those because the web server is insecure in some fashion. And so the criminal does this for two reasons. One, it's free hosting. It makes it more difficult for them to get traced. So you have some sites that are purposefully and maliciously registered, and then you have some domains that, you know, they're just hacked and are being used unfairly, basically. The next thing is spam. We all are really familiar with spam. Domain names are registered in order to perpetrate spam. Some mails are sent from registered domain names because you need to set up a domain name to send the mail from. Spammers also use domain names to set up a destination site. So if they're trying to sell you a service or product, they will sign up a domain name, advertise the domain in the spam to try to get people to go there. Farming is basically a flavor of phishing that involves redirection, sometimes through malware, but it's basically trying to get you to a faked site where people can steal your credentials. And then malware, again, it comes in two varieties. Some domain names are registered specifically by bad guys to as a place where people can go. They'll land there and they'll get malware downloaded to their machines. Or a domain can be set up as a place where the malware resides but is spread from there to other sites. So, again, you have maliciously registered sites which are owned and operated by bad people. However, in a lot of malware cases, evidently the vast majority, domains with malware on them are actually infected. And so these are sites that have gotten the malware from somewhere else. Again, maybe a vulnerability in the hosting software. The registrant may not know that it's happening, and it's certainly not their intent. Sites infected with malware in the past have actually included some very well-known and trusted websites, like newspapers or Walmart.com, for example. Bad guys are actually able to insert things onto those sites in various ways. So again, you have two situations, maliciously registered domains and innocent or compromised domains. Okay. So any questions on that stuff I just laid out? Mike, I see your hand up.
I'm sorry, I didn't take it down. My apologies.
Okay. Martin, go ahead.
Hi, Greg. All I was just thinking there is, as you were going through the list, I've just come back into the call, but all of the sort of phishing and malware elements, as you were just mentioning at the end, a lot of these are where they're taken over at some stage. It's not to do with the actual registration of the domain, but where they are used in phishing or deploying malware, and set up specifically to do so, it's highly likely that they're using false whois or not using valid payment credentials or stolen cards, etc. So I think that gets picked up or should be picked up from some of the other work listed down for investigating whois, etc. Because I think that's the primary issue here, that they're enabling the use of domain names for these purposes because they still give the anonymity that the fraudsters want.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to raise that comment now because I still think there's some of the work that is included within this working group will have an impact on or could potentially have an impact on these sorts of issues, but perhaps not as direct as you would expect from the list here. So these may be questionable about whether they're in scope or not.
Okay, so to paraphrase, who is a way that criminals obscure their activity, and domains registered for these kinds of bad purposes are often registered also using stolen credit card credentials. So that's one of the issues that you're interested in. Is that correct?
Yes, certainly. Yeah.
Okay. Mikey, I see your hand up still.
No, now it's for real. This is Mikey. I think that there's some sort of distinction we could draw between Rasmussen's example of domain names that are embedded in a botnet but not yet registered. Clearly, that's domain registration abuse because there's a plan to register domains for bad purposes sometime in the future. And that, it seems to me, clearly falls within scope. There are other instances, a lot of the ones that you described, Greg, where those seem like domain name abuse and fall outside the scope of our charter, which is the registration event. So I wouldn't want to throw all of these out, but rather discover the ones that zero in on the registration process, but leave all of the other instances to some other working group. Otherwise, we're going to be working until the 2055, trying to keep up with that. So I guess the point I'm advocating is let's try and, I agree, consolidating is good, but then B, let's also try and be very careful of scope on this one.
Okay. I approve Martin. Do you have additional comments?
No, not at this stage. I think Mikey's points are good. Don't bury these ones out of the way at the moment. I'm just wondering whether we can have a look at some of these and put in specifically the fact that they are registered for malicious purposes, and then in that way it segregates those that are hacked into or abused post-registration.
Okay. And George, your hand is up.
I'd have to echo the concerns of Mikey that one wants to make sure that we remain in scope. If we use an example of how telephone numbers are allocated, you would look at the allocation process, making sure that people have accurate information through their phone companies, etc. I don't think the FCC would start making rules as to the content or how the phone numbers are used. They would leave that up to the law enforcement and other agencies of the government. They wouldn't do it through the registration of phone numbers aspect.
Okay. I'm going to raise my own hand. This is Greg Aaron again. One of the questions that we had a very related set of issues come up in the Fast Flux working group. Because the problem with FastFlux is not so much an issue of the technical practice. As it turns out, FastFlux is something that, depending on how you define it, how you implement it, it can be a benign thing or a bad thing. What we were really interested in was malicious use of FastFlux. It's used by botnets to facilitate this. And botnets are clearly a bad thing. They're illegal. One of the issues that came up was this issue of malicious registration, therefore. And the issue became, how do you figure out someone's intent and the name is registered? And is that a valid thing to do? With FastFlux, you find out about it after someone has detected what's going on, basically, which is obviously post-registration. In some cases, FastFlux criminals use the domain name very shortly after they've registered it. In some cases, they wait a few months. They let the domain age for one reason or another. So one of the key issues we wrestled with there was this issue of intent. And basically criminal use. We need to talk about this issue some more, I think. I see Roland's hand up.
Oh, yeah, hi. I was just going to bring into the conversation the IRT, and I went to one of their roadshows in London about a month ago. They seem to be saying that, as far as they were concerned, almost the entire problem with abuse of trademarks and brand names and so forth was people obviously and deliberately setting up sites to sell counterfeit goods, and I suppose that would also include farming sites and fishing sites. And so on one hand, I think we've got some people agreeing with my point of view, which is that a lot of these sites are set up deliberately. You can tell by the name because it relies on somebody else's brand name, but also we have a potential overlap here. We've worried in the past about overlapping our activity with another activity, and maybe all of these are going to be mopped up by the IRT.
Well, I think the IRT is dealing with a more limited scope, which is trademark issues, which are all, another way of saying that is civil issues. Now, what we have is actually a broader thing, which includes some criminal issues. IRT is not, as far as I know, talking about phishing or spam or malware or anything like that. They're talking about trademark infringement.
Yeah, we've got, as Roland again, we've got a sort of silo issue here, because We in the past have seemed a bit reluctant to talk, for example, about who is issues on the basis that somebody else is discussing that. But who is a very narrow issue. It didn't seem to crop up then that we could also discuss it because it was a narrow issue. So if the trademark abuse that the IRT is looking at is a narrow issue, I suppose we can look at it, but we should also look at the who is in that case.
Greg, again, I'll throw out an interesting fact. Like with the IRT's discussions, they're, of course, interested in cyber squatting, which means that the domain name is associated somehow with, for instance, a trademarked firm or a brand name. So the brand name is in the domain name itself in some way. In the cases of spam and phishing and malware, that may not necessarily be the case. I can point you to some research that Rod and I did, and actually with phishing cases, a very small number of the domains registered actually have the name of a bank or other relevant institution in them. Phishers just use whatever domain name they can get their hands on, basically. In some cases, the domain names they register mean nothing at all. I'll post a link up to some of the papers. So kind of different ways that people are doing and carrying out these activities, I think. I see George's hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to give another example to kind of demonstrate the scope issue. If you look at, for example, registration of companies, people, malevolent individuals might want to register a company in order to avoid taxes or to engage in all kinds of illicit activity. But the actual registration process of that company could have been, perfectly legitimate. No abuse happened. You catch them elsewhere, in how they violate the other laws. Companies are fined all the time for criminal activity, monopolistic behavior, but they don't seize their corporate charter. That corporate charter might have been perfectly registered. So I just wanted to toss that out as another example, following up on the telephone number example from before.
Okay.
This is Mikey. The PDF or the Acrobat thing just went away from me. I don't know if it did for everybody or not. But let me chime in rudely, and then I'll get out of the way. I'd be interested in being in a subgroup working on this with the charge of trying to figure out those things that constitute registration abuse in that triumvirate of bad things to do. That seems like a really useful exercise for us, and I just throw that out as a way forward.
Okay. That would be a next step, which is try to figure out what the scope issue is, whether it's in or out, or whether there are aspects that are in. I would be happy to join you in that, Mikey. You want to take the lead on it, and I'll join you on it.
I am not going to be able to do as great a job as Barry because I'm in the last 2 months of a 2-year statewide broadband thing, and I'm writing my brains out. But maybe we could kind of nudge each other along. I'm pretty overwhelmed at the moment.
Okay. Well, is there anyone else interested in tackling this subject? I'm willing to guess that Rod Rasmussen might, because he knows a lot about phishing.
Greg, it's Martin here. I would like to also, I'd like to get involved in this one in terms of there must be some impact, I'm sure, on registries and registrars for having to unwind a lot of this stuff. We're not getting any revenue in from it. So it intrigues me still that there's probably not a great deal of information flowing around as to work out what that impact is and what proactive measures they employ to filter out any fraudulent activity, because they must have some experience from certainly the phishing data. I'm sure some have alluded to the fact that they do quite a lot of upfront filtering to minimize the risk to them. So certainly I'd like to participate in that one and see if there's anything from sort of financial institution side that we can look at and explore within that as well.
Okay. All right. So we'll add you to the group. So that's you, me, Mikey, and we'll ask Rod because he might be interested. Is anyone else interested in joining this sub-effort? Okay. I don't hear any. Marika, it sounds like we can set up another wiki for this topic. For now, I guess we could call it phishing/spam/malware or something like that. I'll take it upon myself to post up to the list a way to consolidate these subjects that are on our master sheet. And let's go ahead and set up a wiki with that tentative title for now. We'll assign Mikey, Martin, and myself, and then whoever else wants to join us over time. The goal on this wiki is going to be to try to figure out the scope issues. For example, are there aspects of the what aspects of these are in scope? What might be out? And do a little digging into the background. How's that sound? Okay.
Marika, this is Mikey. Could you also do the call scheduling doodle thing? It seems like it'd be good for us to get a call on the books too.
Okay. Could you just indicate, would you like a call this week or next week?
I will be on vacation next week, for what that's worth.
This week is fine with me. You know, I've got some gaps in the action. So the earlier in the week is actually better. By the end of the week, I'm out of town dealing with this broadband gizmo. So it would be great if we could do it either tomorrow or Wednesday.
Okay, I'll work with Gizmo to get a doodle going, and if not this week, maybe we can do it in 2 weeks' time otherwise.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's Martin here. Wednesday is probably better for me this week if we're going to try and do it earlier. That's good.
We'll try some times on Tuesday, Wednesday, so you can indicate what works. Okay?
Okay. Cheers.
Okay, great. Well, in one fell swoop, we've addressed, looks like, gotten underway on several rows on our master sheet here, so that's good. We have just a couple of minutes left before we have to close things down. Just briefly, as far as scheduling, our next meeting is in 2 weeks, same time, same channel. And then the next meeting after that would be September 14th. We agreed last time that those times were fine. That skips over the Labor Day weekend in the United States. So are there any other closing comments from anybody?
George here. Do we have a schedule of what we should do for the next meeting?
I'll be putting out the action items from the minutes. But we've got some action items in each of the groups that we've gotten underway here, it looks like. I'll put those up to the list.
Okay.
And then if I've missed anything, please let me know. So thanks again, especially to those of you who have been working on material up on the wiki, folks like George and Barry. That's really one of the big purposes of this working group, which is to get that material up for people to discuss and react to. The time that you're spending on it is very much appreciated. So thanks again, guys. Yeah, good job. So if nothing else, why don't we close down the call. And thanks. Please enjoy what remains of your summer. And we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. You take care.
Thank you.